This podcast is brought to you by the film Ezra from Bleecker Street, directed by Tony Goldwyn. Oh, he's hot. With an incredible ensemble that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, and Whoopi Goldberg. Ezra is a funny and endearing story about Max, a divorced father struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When faced with difficult decisions about the future, they embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Deadline calls Ezra a touching testament to the power of love. In theaters, May 31st. Probiotics can be an important part of your daily routine, and they certainly are a part of mine, but sometimes they are a hassle to take. Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are just what they sound like, adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. They're tiny, but still pack a punch, supporting both digestive and vaginal health. To learn more, visit naturesway.com/pearls and use code CHELSEA10 at checkout for 10% off any Pearls probiotics. Terms and conditions apply, valid through July 31st.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
Hi, Catherine.
Oh, hello, Chelsea.
Hi, I'm just frying myself in Majorca. It's so hot here. It's so hot. I'm just trying to figure out where I'm going to go next because I might have to leave before my next guests get here. It's too hot.
Oh, no. Well, were your first guests fun at least?
Yeah, no, everyone's been fun. We've had a lot of good laughs. We've had a lot of good, you know, everything's legal in Spain. Mushrooms, LSD, even cocaine is legal in Spain.
Really?
Cocaine's legal in Canada now, I just found out. I'm like, cocaine? Every time you think cocaine is out of style, it makes some sort of comeback.
I mean, I was like, wait, this is like a thing again now? And I feel like it's happening all over again. Although now I'm too afraid to try it because of all the additives.
Well, in America, that's a thing. Fentanyl in London, like, everyone was doing blow. I was like, what? I was like, people are still doing cocaine here? I mean, not everybody, but a good portion of people. I was like, what about fentanyl? They're like, we don't have that problem here. I'm like, oh, really?
Really?
You don't have fentanyl here? Mm. Only America has that problem because we have people like Ron DeSantis and Trump to deal with. So we need the fentanyl.
I was going to ask, you've spent a lot of family time this summer. Do you get sick of being around family? After a certain amount of time.
I get sick of everybody. I mean, I just like to, I mean, it's better, you know, like post-therapy. Now I know I'm just better at modulating my moods and not freaking out or losing my shit. Like, I don't really do that anymore, luckily. I mean, good. I don't want to write it off completely because watch, it'll happen tonight. But I'm pretty good about that. And when I want to be alone, I'm just pretty obvious about it. I just remove myself from a situation.
Yeah.
And I just read that book, Lessons in Chemistry. That was I keep trying to stop reading books so I could just focus on writing my book. But then I'm like, fuck, I love reading so much. And I feel like every time you read something, you gain something for writing. So, but when I don't have time, like if I'm over people, I just go and read my book somewhere. Well, the thing that annoys me the most is when you are reading a book and someone starts talking to you. It's like, wait, what do you think I'm doing? What does this fucking look like? I'm reading.
I'm busy. I'm looking at something else. That happens to me quite often. And I won't say who it is, but it's definitely the person who lives with me.
Brad.
It's like, hey, do you want to have a conversation right now?
We got that. We got that. Very loud and clear. Yes. I went and got this MRI called like Pronuva or something, which is like a body MRI to like detect any early like tumors or anything. It's supposed to be like a pre-detection. But once you do it, you know, open yourself up to everything because everyone has nodules or growths or like little things. So, but my doctor was like, oh, I see something in like your L5, L6. I was like, what's that? He's like, your neck. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, something's off in your neck. I have to order you a spinal MRI and see how bad it is, if it's something that we need to look at or whatever. And as soon as he said that, my neck hasn't stopped killing me.
Oh, no. That is a thing, though.
Well, it's psychosomatic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, oh, fuck. Now my neck is killing me.
No. Okay. So I have to tell you, I've never talked about this with you before, I don't think, but my therapist I go to is a somatic pain therapist. And I found her about a year ago or a year and a half ago now, maybe, because I was having terrible pain in my feet. I'd been having like really bad plantar fasciitis for like 6 years. And I had had these painful episodes where I just had this like terrible pelvic pain and they would come and go and I didn't know what was setting them off. And so I started seeing this somatic pain therapist after several symptoms told me, like, maybe this isn't a physical pain. Maybe this is something else. Like, I would move around my body. Some days my left knee would hurt. Some days my right knee would hurt, which if it's structural, that's not going to happen, right? So I can't tell you the difference that this therapy has made in my life. I no longer have any foot pain. Instead of feeling pain when I wake up in the morning, when I set my feet on the ground, I feel like, oh, I might need to stretch a little bit. It has helped me totally reframe all of my pain. My pain events, when they do happen, they're very, very mild, and I can sort of like breathe through them and meditate through them, which is something that like surgery did not fix. But yeah, it's a lot about people pleasing, a lot about stress. Oh. And this therapy, which really I kept thinking, like, what's it going to be like? Are they going to give me special meditations that are going to fix all these things? Because it's specifically about pain. But it's just really normal therapy where they kind of help you figure out all your pain stuff and how to fix your stress stuff so that the pain goes away or is much reduced or you have a different relationship to it. So yeah, that's something I haven't talked about on this before.
Interesting.
But,
interesting. Yeah. A somatic therapist. So yes. Somatic is body.
Uh-huh. And the thing about somatic pain, like we used to call it psychosomatic pain, but it is real pain. It's like you're really feeling this pain, but it's sort of your brain misinterpreting signals from your body that it thinks are pain, but really they're really just sort of like warning signals of like, maybe you're too tired, maybe mm-hmm. you're this. I had a couple friends who had really bad back pain and they had sort of done similar therapies and they like don't have back pain anymore. Like my one girlfriend says, you know, when I start to have like a twinge in my back and I feel some like a throw my back out coming on, I know that I need to like sit and rest and journal. You know,
journal
and like get her stress and stuff out.
So I went to the LA Pain Psychology Center and they helped me tremendously.
I can't journal.
No,
I can't hand write stuff. My hands hurt always. If I write a card, a birthday card, my hand hurts for an hour after.
Although I would argue that you write many journals. They just get published as books.
Well, I type those. Yeah. I can type. I have no problem typing, but I can't hand writing. I'm like, ow. That's why I'm scared to put out another book because I don't want to do that many. I can't sign those books again. So many books you have to sign when you have a book
like
coming.
Like hundreds, right?
Yeah. It's like your hand, you get carpal tunnel, totally. Yeah. I mean, when I go on book tours and like do book signings, I literally go in after and put my hand in an ice bucket.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I've got to learn how to sign with my toes.
Or something, or like a stamp.
Or Bernice needs to fucking chip in. She's
so
lazy.
Oh my gosh,
Oh, Bernice is my lover. Okay. Our next guest is a very well-known Canadian physician and author. He has written the books When the Body Says No, Scattered Minds, and In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts. He's also written a book called Hold On to Your Kids. And his most recent book, which has been on the New York Times bestseller list for 19 weeks, is called The Myth of Normal. Please welcome Gabor Maté.
Hello.
Oh, hello, doctor. Good morning. Well, good afternoon-ish. Nice to meet you. I'm Chelsea.
Yeah, nice to meet you. My name is Gabor, and I wish you'd drop the doctor stuff, okay?
I'm so used to everyone calling me a doctor, so I was just projecting. And you know Catherine, my co-host. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I can call you a doctor if you want.
Yeah, sure, whatever. It's very nice to speak with you. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I'm very much looking forward to asking you some questions and having you help some of our callers with their life advice and life questions.
Well, if I can do it, I'll try.
So your new book, which has been on the New York Times bestseller list, is called The Myth of Normal. And your book before that was also a huge success. And it is called When the Body Says No, which has been brought up on our podcast multiple times. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the relationship between trauma and ADHD and how ADD and ADHD differentiate with their relationship to trauma. If you could speak to that a little bit, I'm very curious.
Sure. Well, that's actually my first book, which I wrote when I was in my mid-50s and just diagnosed freshly with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And that book is called Scattered Minds. Now, the characteristics of this condition are that people have trouble staying focused. They tend to tune out, kind of absent-minded a lot. So they tend to lose things, forget things, mix up appointments, this kind of stuff. miss parts of conversations. They tend to have poor impulse control. So when they want to do something, even if they know it's not so good for them, they tend to do it. So people with ADD slip very easily into addictions. And the hyperactive part is some of them have trouble sitting still. They're restless. They have to move all the time. You can see their feet tapping on the floor or their thumbs fidgeting on the table. You know, that's the hyperactive part. So now the usual medical view of it, which I don't agree with, is that this is a genetic brain disorder that's passed on from one generation to the next. Now, I was diagnosed with it. So were two of my kids. And I don't think it's either a disease of the brain, nor do I think it's genetic. So what is it actually? And this is where life experience comes into it. Tuning out is an actual capacity of the human brain. As an example, if I were to stress you right now by being rude, inappropriate, aggressive, you'd have some healthy options. You could just hang up on me, say, heck with you. Or you could fight back and tell me, Gabo, you don't have the right to talk to me that way. What if you couldn't either escape or fight back? Then how would you handle it? I tell you how you'd handle it. When there's a lot of stress and a person is helpless, the brain tunes out as a defense mechanism. If this happens early in life, if the parents are stressed because of relationship troubles or because their own unresolved trauma or because of economic stress or racialist stress or whatever stress, the child is very sensitive. The infant is very sensitive to the parent's emotional states. When the parent is stressed, the child is stressed. When the infant and the young child are stressed, there's not much they can do about it. They tune out. There's a defense mechanism. They don't do it deliberately. And when are they doing this? When their brain is developing. So how the human brain develops is an interaction with the environment. And if you look at the studies on human brain development, the biggest influence on neurochemicals, the circuitry, the networks of the brain is the emotional relationship with the adults. If that relationship is stressed, not because the parents don't love their kids, it's not because they're not trying to do their best, because they themselves are stressed, the child is stressed. In other words, what happens is that the tuning out gets wired into the brain. And then 10 years later, or 50 years later in my case, the person is diagnosed with this so-called brain disease that they inherited. Now, what happened to me was, I was a Jewish infant under the Nazis in Hungary in the Second World War. I don't have to go into it here. But you can imagine how stressed it was, how stressed my mother was. How did I deal with that stress? I tune out. And this is when my brain is developing. Now, my own kids grew up in Canada in a loving home, but with a father who was a workaholic, ADD-driven personality. And when I was at home, I was very often in a bad mood. And since I hate to tell you guys this, but we always marry somebody at the same level of trauma that we're at. Mm. It means I met and married a woman who was as traumatized as I was, not in the same way, but to the same degree. So now we have two traumatized parents, two young people who haven't worked out their traumas, acting it out on each other in a form of family conflict, and our kids living in a stressed environment. So they tune out. So yeah, what was passed on here is not the ADD. What was passed on was the stress and the trauma, which is multi-generational.
You've talked quite a bit about those things that we develop as children as coping mechanisms, ADHD being one of them. I know that's my situation as well, but how we take those into adulthood in ways that don't serve us. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, so first of all, the tuning out, which is a coping mechanism, gets wired into the brain. So it does become a matter of brain physiology, but the problem didn't start in the brain. It started with how the environment acted on the brain. It's difficult in adult life to be in a relationship with somebody who's got ADHD because the poor attention span, the poor impulse control. Sometimes my wife would say, you're not listening to me, you know, thinking I was not doing it deliberately. But actually, what would actually happen is that especially when the emotional environment gets a bit heavy, I tend to tune out.
Can I ask you a question? When you say tune out, when you're talking about that, are you talking about disassociation or is that a separate category?
Yeah, well, disassociation simply means disconnecting from the present moment.
So same thing.
So there are degrees of it. Mm-hmm. So I would say that ADHD is a milder form of dissociation. And it's not all the time. When you're very interested in something, very motivated, oh, you can pay perfect attention. So partly it's also a matter of motivation, emotional safety, comfort, and so on. But the point is, if you came to me as a parent with a kid with ADHD, what would you rather hear? Sir or madam, you've got this kid with this genetic brain disease, or you've got a kid who probably grew up in a stressed environment, not your fault, you did your best, but if you provide the right environment, that kid can develop new brain circuits and can grow in very healthy ways. So the second message puts more responsibility on the parent, not guilt, but responsibility. But at the same time, if you're a parent, which would you rather hear?
Yeah. And that's very hopeful, you know, for people to be able to know that they can change their behavior if they put in the work towards it and the effort needed. What do you think the contribution of social media and all of that has on ADD and ADHD?
Well, first of all, let me say something about the contribution of social culture in general. Because if you look at what's happening with that diagnosis, or I should say any other childhood diagnosis, childhood depression, childhood anxiety, self-cutting, bulimia, anorexia, childhood suicides, these numbers are going up and up and up and up and up here in North America. Now, if these are genetic disorders, why would they be going up? Genes don't change in a population over 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 or 50 years. So if the numbers are going up, there's something happening in the culture. Mm-hmm. And what's happening in the culture is that people are much more isolated and much more stressed than they used to be. And parents are much more isolated and stressed than they used to be. Close parents that are even together, but there's a high divorce rate. And there's a high rate of depression amongst adults. And that's affecting the children. So what I'm saying is that the reason we're seeing more and more of these childhood disorders is not because of any genetic epidemic, but because the conditions under which human beings develop and thrive are less and less available. And that's really the essential motif of my most recent book, The Myth of Normal. The subtitle is The Myth of Normal, Trauma, Illness, and Healing in a Toxic Culture. And I'm basically saying we're living in a toxic culture now. Mm-hmm. Now, social media comes into it. How? First of all, one of the essential needs of children is free play, spontaneous play out there in nature. As soon as you introduce screens into the kid's life, that's over with. Because these things, these devices, not only are they highly addictive, they're designed to be addictive. Mm-hmm. They call it neuromarketing. They design them to hook in the brains of young kids. And if you look at the brains of children who are allowed on social media, they don't look normal. Circuits that involve thinking and emotional regulation are attenuated or not well developed as a result of screen use. Number one. Number two, there's the addictive thing. You take a kid on social media. If you're a parent and your kid is addicted to social media, you try and get them to stop it. I worked with drug addicts. One of my books is on addiction. And I worked with some of the most severe drug addicts in North America, actually, trying to separate a child who is hooked on their social media from their devices. It's like trying to get a severely opiate-dependent individual off their heroin. They hate you, they attack you, they fight back, they're hostile, they're really upset. Why? Because they're addicted. And they're responding like any addicted person to the threatened deprivation of their addictive preference. Thirdly, a lot of parents use social media as a way of babysitting their kids. Now, I don't blame them for it. Parenting was never meant to be as difficult and as isolated and as stressed as it is in this culture. But the result is that people are no longer relating to adults in their lives. How we evolved as human beings is we lived in small tribes, but the adults were all around us the whole day. Now kids can spend the whole day relating to each other, which means they lose respect for the adults because we tend to get our orientation and our guidance from the people that we're connecting with. When kids are connecting with other kids most of the time, they can care less what the adults think. And they start getting obstreperous and resistant. And the adults think, what's wrong with these kids? Nothing's wrong with the kids. What's wrong with the kids is that the healthy relationship with adults has been so weakened in this culture that kids are influencing each other. I mean, look at all the child influences out there. Immature creatures. I don't mean that as a pejorative. I just mean objectively, they're immature. They're not having matured yet. And they're influencing millions of their peers. I mean, that's a frightening phenomenon.
Yeah, but with what you said earlier, I mean, you can retrain that neural circuitry, right? You can create new habits at any time, almost. I mean, unless you have some other inhibiting factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a hopeless situation if you address the situation and try to limit the addictive behavior of children on their devices. I mean, I saw my friend's 4-year-old son throw an iPad at her face when she tried to take it away from him. And I thought, oh my God, that's an addict. That's like taking away. Yeah. So it is very disturbing. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by the new film Ezra from Bleecker Street. Directed by Tony Goldwyn and with an incredible ensemble cast that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, Whoopi Goldberg, Rose Byrne, Rainn Wilson, and Vera Farmiga. Along with newcomer William A. Fitzgerald, the film is an endearing and often funny story about Max, a divorced father and stand-up comedian living with his father and struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When forced to confront difficult decisions about the future, Max and Ezra embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Ezra is an endearing and often funny exploration of a family determined to find their way through life's complexities with humor, compassion, and heart. An official selection of Deadline calls the film a touching testament to the power of love. IndieWire says it's funny and moving, and according to Next Best Picture, Ezra approaches autism with heart and authenticity. Only in theaters nationwide May 31st.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
I know you discuss in your books, all of your books, the mind-body connection. So when you're talking about retraining the neural circuitry, how does the body fall in step with that?
Again, if you look at how we evolved as human creatures, we didn't evolve in cities and pavements and isolated apartments. We evolved out there in nature, living with other human beings in small groups and traveling with them and hunting with them and collecting food with them. But there was a real sense of community. And in Canada, as in the United States, Indigenous people suffer the most in terms of addictions and suicides and autoimmune diseases and domestic violence. Why? Because of what was done to them. In Canada and in some parts of the United States, there were these state-enforced, church-run residential schools with an Indigenous child as much as spoke their own tribal language, they had a pin stuck to their tongue to discourage them from speaking their own language. Where they were sexually abused, physically abused, they often died, starved, beaten. As a result of all that multi-generational trauma, these people have a lot of addictions, a lot of mental health issues, a lot of physical health issues. So I'm often asked to go to these communities and help with their healing process. So that's one reason I go there. They have such wisdom. Their traditional wisdom is so much more holistic and connected. And they see themselves not as isolated individuals, but as part of a universe, really. Very much in their bodies, in their natural states, and in their gut feelings, connected to their gut feelings. Now, one of the things that happens in trauma is that people get disconnected from their gut feelings. Have you ever met a one-day-old baby not connected to their gut feelings? So something happened. something happened that disconnected you from your body. And what happened was that at some point you learned that to be accepted by your environment, you kind of had to disconnect from yourself. Now, that also means that healing also happens to the body. And so that when you're ignoring your gut feelings, you're ignoring your body. That's what you're doing. So when I teach people healing modalities, it is very much to do with reconnecting with the body, actually being aware of what's in your body, what's in your throat, what's in your belly, what's happening in your chest, how are your muscles feeling, what's your, you know, so reconnecting with the body. Because the brain and the mind can't be separated, when you're present with your body, you're present with your brain as well.
And you've said when a no comes up for you, it's begging to be said. And if you don't say no, that the body will do it for you in the form of illness. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Well, you guys live on where, in LA or where?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's say you live in LA and we're friends and I fly into LA and Catherine, I call you up and I say, hey, can we go for coffee? But you don't want to because you've just been up all night tending a sick friend or a sick dog or a sick child. I don't know. Or maybe you just don't feel like it, period. You know? But you don't say no. What's going to be the impact on you if you don't say no? If you're in that state, you don't say no, you have coffee with me. What's going to be the impact on you?
I can already feel that feeling in my stomach.
I mean, I do that all the time. I do things I don't feel like doing all the time.
What is the impact on you?
I mean, I don't know specifically, but I definitely, it's so hard because that's life, you know, so many.
No, it isn't. That's life as you created it. Okay. Mm. Now, and you don't say no, will you agree that you're more likely to be tired?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Irritable.
more likely to be irritable, stressed, more likely to have difficulty sleeping, or, you know, there's going to be some impact. Not only that, you're going to be more resentful as well. Now, all those states are body states. When you don't know how to say no, and we can talk about why people have such trouble saying no. I totally understand what you're saying, but it tells me a certain history. When you don't know how to say no, and the body sends you these messages, like whatever feeling in your belly or the fatigue, or and you don't pay attention, it might end up saying no in a big way. And when I studied chronic illness, like autoimmune diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, colitis, Crohn's disease, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, chronic psoriasis, eczema, asthma, I could go on. Typical of the people that develop those conditions is they don't know how to say no. So they take on too much stress. Why? Because they're afraid of disappointing the other person. And they think it's their responsibility to make other people happy and never to let anybody down. And while it's good to be kind, it's dangerous to be kind only to others and not to yourself.
Right.
Now, I'm not blaming anybody. These patterns develop in childhood. It meant that as a child, you were discouraged from saying no because you were taught to be nice and pleasant and compliant and appeasing people and pleasing people. Or maybe your parents were so stressed, maybe they were alcoholics, or maybe they were fighting, or maybe they were economically overwhelmed, and you kind of took on the responsibility of making them feel better by meeting their needs and forgetting your own. So this is not how life has to be. It's the way a lot of children in this society are programmed. Now, if you ask the question, and I have a chapter on this in The Myth of Normal, why is it that women have 80% of autoimmune disease? Why is it of the two major genders in this culture? Which is the one that's acculturated and programmed into pleasing other people, ignoring their own needs, repressing their healthy anger so they always should be nice?
Mm-hmm. It's women.
Not to disappoint others and take responsibility of other people's feelings. It's women. Mm-hmm. And that's why women have more autoimmune disease, because the mind and the body being inseparable scientifically, when your emotions and your psychic apparatus in your brain, by psychic I mean the emotional apparatus in your brain, is connected to your immune system, to your guts, to your heart, to your lungs, to your nervous system, when things are disturbed in your emotional apparatus, they're going to be disturbed in your immune apparatus as well. I mean, you don't know how to say no, which is a boundary defense, your immune system gets confused as well. Now, that may sound radical to a lot of people who are not familiar with what I'm talking about. Certainly, most of my fellow physicians wouldn't know what the heck I was talking about. That's not their fault. And it's not because I'm not talking science. I am talking science. It's just that the science of mind-body unity is still not taught in most medical schools. So doctors learn purely the physiological side of things, but not the unity of mind and body.
Right, which is a much more holistic approach to everything. What do you think the correlation is? Well, I think I know the answer to this, but between, you know, trauma, losing like a family member. My brother died when we were young, and my sister was diagnosed with lupus like 2.5 years later. My mother was diagnosed with cancer 2.5 years later, exactly at the same times. And that's when we started to learn more about what trauma does and how it can cause disease. Can you speak to that a little bit?
First of all, it's striking how many families are similar to yours, where a whole lot of supposedly unrelated diseases show up, but not they're not unrelated if you understand that trauma is at the basis of them. And that's the point I keep making in the book, The Myth of Normal. But on my computer, if I had prepared this, I could show you a photograph of a young woman who I met 4 years ago in Britain. Her face was covered with this red rash, a butterfly-looking rash. And her fingers were white as chalk. She had lupus. And her fingers were white because they'd been deprived of blood supply because the arteries had narrowed. She came to a lecture I gave in London 4 years ago on when the body says no and the connection between stress, trauma, and autoimmune disease like lupus is. I could show you the photographs now. Her face is totally normal looking. Her fingers are pink as anything. She's got no disease and she's on no medication. Why? Because she learned how to say no. She learned how to start looking after herself. She learned to stand up for herself, not to live her life to please other people, but to get to know her real self that she got disconnected from long ago in childhood, and she's healthy as anything. And it's not an unusual story. So what happened in your family is your sister, I bet, is one of these personalities that took on the emotional needs of others and ignored her own. Probably didn't know how to express anger in any kind of a healthy way. Probably had no idea how to say no. Probably that goes back to your childhoods and your sister's childhood, where she took on a certain role in the family. Probably there was a lot of stress in your family of origin when you guys were small. So all these different diseases are manifestations of trauma and disconnection from the self.
Yeah, I would say the two people in my family, my mother and my sister, had the quietest, the biggest people pleasers in our family. I certainly haven't been a people pleaser for a long time, even though I still continue to do things I don't feel like doing. But yes, and how scientifically is that measured? Is there a measure for something like that? Because as you're saying, it's kind of almost nascent in medicine for most doctors to even take the mind-body connection seriously. So how does one measure that?
But Chelsea, that's what's so weird, is that none of these ideas are new. Jean-Martin Charcot, the French neurologist who first described multiple sclerosis, said that this disease is caused by stress. A great Canadian, American, British physician, Sir William Osler, said the same thing about rheumatoid arthritis in 1890. In 1939, there was a very famous lecture given at Harvard University by a doctor who's still revered at Harvard. And this lecture was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, where he said that emotional factors are as important in the causation of illness as physical ones, and they have to be at least as important in treatment. And this article was published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, in 1940. And to this day, even though you remember his name, they don't remember what he taught. They don't teach what he taught. Now, in the decades since this famous physician at Harvard made that statement, we've had 80 years of research showing that it's not that the emotional system in the brain is connected to the nervous system or to the immune system. They're not connected. They're the same system. Like people who tend to look after people with Alzheimer's, who tend to be women, by the way, the caregivers, their chromosomes suffer. Their immune system is diminished. They're more likely to get colds. If they get a cold, it's going to last longer. If you wound them on the skin as a test, that wound will take longer to heal. So the emotional stress of caregiving actually diminishes immunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, and we're going to take some callers.
This podcast is brought to you by the new film Ezra from Bleecker Street. Directed by Tony Goldwyn and with an incredible ensemble cast that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, Whoopi Goldberg, Rose Byrne, Rainn Wilson, and Vera Farmiga.
Along with newcomer William A. Fitzgerald, the film is an endearing and often funny story about Max, a divorced father and stand-up comedian living with his father and struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When forced to confront difficult decisions about the future, Max and Ezra embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Ezra is an endearing and often funny exploration of a family determined to find their way through life's complexities with humor, compassion, and heart. An official selection of Deadline calls the film a touching testament to the power of love. IndieWire says it's funny and moving, and according to Next Best Picture, Ezra approaches autism with heart and authenticity. Only in theaters nationwide May 31st.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back.
We're back. So our first caller today is Mina. Dear Chelsea, she says, a few years ago, my anxiety started taking a toll on my relationship and my physical health. After hearing your experience with Dr. Dan, which is Chelsea's therapist, Dan Siegel.
Oh, Dan is your therapist.
Oh, yes, yes.
We're good friends, Dan and I.
Oh, good. Good to know.
As a matter of fact, about 5 weeks ago, I was going through a very difficult time. And guess who I called?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. Mina says, I have embarked on EMDR therapy for what my therapist calls complex trauma, and I've been facing things I never thought I would have to relive so that I can process them in a healthy way. That being said, I still really struggle with mind-body connection. Unless I engage 4 out of my 5 senses, I simply cannot shut my brain off. So essentially, unless I'm listening to exotic flute music while submerged in an ice bath with a eucalyptus leaf under my nose, it's impossible for me to meditate. Do you have any suggestions on forms of meditation or other therapies that engage several senses at once or any other tactics? Just listening to something doesn't cut it for me. Thank you for everything, Mina.
Hi, Mina.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi. Our special guest today is Gabor Mate, so I think you're going to be in good hands. Oh, are you so excited? Look at that face.
Oh, shit. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hi.
Hi.
Let me just go back to the original statement that the anxiety was hard on your relationship.
Yeah. So I wrote this a couple of months ago. And since I have written through to Chelsea and Catherine, I've started EMDR.
Yeah, I hear that.
Which has been amazing and incredibly helpful. I've been in therapy for a while, but the EMDR has also been quite difficult, to be honest.
Yeah. What was difficult about it for you?
Honestly, it resurfaced a lot of trauma that I had about 10 or 12 years ago that mm-hmm. I had not, I mean, I knew was there, but it hadn't really come up for me until I sort of went in this deep dive. The first couple of times I did the reprocessing, I didn't actually notice anything, to be honest. I sort of felt a bit like nothing was happening. And then I did it a few more times and I felt extremely uncomfortable. And I didn't sleep well, and I started having very vivid dreams and a lot of anxiety.
All right. And did you tell your therapist that?
Yeah. She's aware.
And when you told your therapist, what happened?
She said that it was completely normal and part of the process.
And did you want to continue with that process?
I have continued, yes.
Is that because you wanted to continue with it?
Yes.
Can you check in with yourself right now? So what's happening for you at the present moment?
A little bit of a pit in the base of my stomach.
Tell me what that feels like. Is that okay if I ask you that?
Yeah. It's similar to when I actually do EMDR and my therapist asked me, she goes, how are you feeling after or during? And I always say, oh, I have a bit of a little pit in my stomach. And it feels really uncomfortable.
Okay, so there's a discomfort there.
Yeah.
Can you put your attention on that for a moment? How familiar is it to you? Is it new? Is it old?
Very.
Is it very fun? How far does it go back?
My whole life.
Okay. That means they have some difficult news for you. Okay?
Yeah.
But it's intended to be helpful.
Yeah.
Your trauma didn't start 10 or 12 years ago.
No, I know.
It goes way back.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so that's the first point, okay? In your therapy, have you dealt with that long ago stuff or not?
We've done exercises where it's what's the strongest memory and what's the earliest memory.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go into the earliest memory, I do the reprocessing.
So how far have you gone back?
Like 4 years old.
4 years old. So it does go back a long way.
Yeah.
First of all, what I'm hearing is you've had some traumas in childhood that you're still working on right now.
Yeah.
That sometimes when you do the EMDR or even talk about it, but somebody like me, it brings up these physical feelings that are so familiar to you.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is, you know, I agree with your therapist. I mean, that's going to happen. The method I'd recommend for you, and actually probably Chelsea could talk to you about this, is Dan Siegel's Wheel of Awareness. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm not, no.
It's a very simple, a very easy to learn mindful awareness technique, but I think it's very effective. Because it allows you to identify your calm center, even as you're having these experiences, you're going to find that sort of grounded center in the middle of it all that'll help you get through it.
Yeah. So I get like intense panic, really, really intense panic.
And what happens when you get into panic?
I basically just disassociate.
But what happens? Do you hyperventilate? Do you shake?
I hyperventilate. I get nauseous, cold sweats. I can't see straight. It's a full panic attack.
Okay, well, look, here's what I have to tell you. I cannot, in this short conversation, in the context of a podcast, really help you as much as I'd want to. I'd really have to spend time with you, be in your presence, talk about some of your stuff, have your experience, whatever you're going through, be there with you, and then I could tell you how it would help you. In this case, you're dealing with a tough problem, but sounds like you got some good support, so that's the good news. You have good support professionally, and you have good support, sounds like, personally. I cannot solve the problem for you in the short term. I wish I could.
No, of course not. But I want to jump in and just say a couple of things to you. First of all, the Wheel of Awareness is a great reference, and this is Dan Siegel. He's got tons of books that he's written as well. It's basically...
Yeah, wait, Chelsea, Dan's your therapist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys are why I went into therapy.
Oh, great. Uh-huh. Love it. So it's basically your center and you are spokes on a wheel and everything that's coming out of you is kind of your wheel of awareness, right? And it's almost like if you're a plane and you're flying over yourself, the center of your gravity, you're looking down, like your emotions are this flying over and this is your center. So anything that's happening within you, you can be an observer of instead of being in reaction to it, right? You don't need to necessarily,
right.
Because when you are having these panic attacks, I suspect it's because you're trying to escape the feeling that you're having.
Yeah.
Right? That pit in your stomach.
Yeah. It's almost like anxiety about having anxiety.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is something that is going to be very helpful to you because it was very helpful to me. When you're having such a negative feeling or a feeling that is bringing you to a place that you don't want to recall, you have the power to sit with it instead of trying to push it away and saying, I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about it. You take it in and feel it wholly And that is the way for it to move through your body and also your brain without sending you right. into a flurry and sending you into a panic attack. And it is a practice. So you get these feelings.
See, that scares me so much, the idea of sitting with it.
I know, but this is what's going to set you free from panic attacks.
But you know what? You can also listen to Dan guiding you through it. So you're not actually as alone as you think you are.
Yes.
There's one final thing I want to say to you. There's nothing wrong with you, okay? You don't have a mental illness. What you've got is a perfectly normal response to something abnormal that happened to you.
That's really comforting to hear because nobody's phrased it like that.
Whatever the circumstances were, whereas the four-year-old, you first developed this anxiety, there's two things I can tell you. You were being hurt, and there was nobody there to listen to you, to hear you, and to hold you.
Yeah.
And our brains, you know what? Our brains have a circuit in it for panic. We actually have a panic circuit. Because if an infant is left alone and they're in danger or they're lonely, they should panic. And when they panic, what do? They scream for help. And when they scream for help, what should happen? The adult should come running.
Yeah.
In your case, nobody came running.
Exactly. Yeah.
You were being hurt. And there was nobody there to help. Your panic is a perfectly normal human response to something abnormal that never should have happened. And if it did happen, you never should have been alone with it. So you had to just really rest in the idea that there's nothing wrong with you, that it's uncomfortable, it's scary, but there's nothing wrong with you.
That is really comforting to hear.
And to give yourself the time to deal with those difficult emotions. I know it's like you just said, it sounds so scary, but if you sit with yourself, it's just a feeling and it will pass. As soon as you resist it, it persists, right? Mm-hmm. Like we know that. As soon as you say, no, I don't want to feel this way, then that's when you start to scramble. That's when you start to panic. If you allow it to sit with you and you sit there and let it work its way through your body, as scary as that may be, it most likely won't result in the way it has been resulting for you.
That's what's so crazy is like, there are times where I'll like let it sit through and I'll be like, oh, wow, look at that. It passed and I was totally fine. And then there are other times where I'm like, I'm going to die from this feeling like that, that overwhelming panic.
Yeah, and whenever you have that thought and when you have that tension in you, what you're actually having is a memory of childhood.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. So you might want to remind yourself, if you can, I'm having a memory right now. When I say memory, I mean a body memory.
Yeah. And just to remember, like, I'm an adult. And
you're safe.
Exactly.
And you're safe.
Yeah, that's not happening to you anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And try not to resist it. Like, you know what I mean? I know it's, you don't want it, but when it comes, go, okay, try a different exercise. Try and bring it in and say, okay, because you've experienced it before and it will pass. Everything passes.
Yeah.
And the more control you gain over it, the more you minimize this happening to you.
There's a huge difference. Not only that you're an adult and you were a child then, but then you had no opportunity to ask for help and now you do.
Yeah.
So it'll never be as bad as it was then, okay?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so, so much. Seriously.
You're welcome.
It's amazing.
You're Thanks, welcome. Mina. Good luck to you.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Mina.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I love that advice you gave. When I had told Chelsea beforehand, I had done some work on somatic pain therapy, and a lot of it was, what's the feeling you're feeling? Focusing on it. And there is something wild about when you focus on the pain, it feels different. It diminishes, whether that's emotional pain, whether that's physical pain. But I also think for Mina, the fact that she's having this anger and this anxiety come up that she's been repressing for so long, like that's the work being done. You know, it's messy and it's sticky and it affects those around us while we're going through it. But I think she's really well on her way to healing.
Look, exactly what I say to people often is, you can have two kinds of pain. You can have the pain of trying to escape into denial, into addictions. Addictions are all about escaping pain, all of them. Or into relationships, or into mindless watching television, or whatever. You can have and then have the consequences of those behaviors or eating or whatever, you know, or you can have the pain of discovering the truth. You may not have a choice of whether you're going to have pain or not. It's a question of which pain are you going to, do you want? Do you want the pain that's going to help you grow? Or do you want the pain that's going to keep you stuck?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the toxicity, one of the poisonous aspects, as far as I'm concerned, of this culture, it's so much about escaping pain rather than dealing with the sources of it.
It's funny when you talk about that mindlessly watching TV, you know, a lot of people don't think about that. They think, oh, you're relaxing. I've done that so many times where it's such an escapism. I mean, and it's just like any other addiction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mindlessly watching TV isn't always mindlessly watching TV.
And when you actually look at the content of it, so much of it is so bad for people, you know, like all the violence they watch, all the degraded relationships, the ingesting some really toxic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they say, you know, our brains can't tell the difference between watching something violent on TV and when it's happening to us. You know, our brains aren't that evolved. We experience that stress from whatever we're watching on television.
By the way, I'm not saying people should never watch TV, nor is it always bad to escape. But if you're going to do it, don't do it mindlessly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Like anything.
You know what? I'm going to take half an hour now, an hour. I'm going to totally veg out. So veg out consciously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like eating, right? You got to eat mindfully.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is brought to you by the new film Ezra from Bleecker Street, directed by Tony Goldwyn and with an incredible ensemble cast that includes Robert De Niro, Bobby Cannavale, Whoopi Goldberg, Rose Byrne, Rainn Wilson, and Vera Farmiga. Along with newcomer William A. Fitzgerald, the film is an endearing and often funny story about Max, a divorced father and stand-up comedian living with his father and struggling to co-parent his autistic son, Ezra. When forced to confront difficult decisions about the future, Max and Ezra embark on a cross-country road trip that has a transcendent impact on both their lives. Ezra is an endearing and often funny exploration of a family determined to find their way through life's complexities with humor, compassion, and heart. An official selection of Deadline calls the film a touching testament to the power of love. IndieWire says it's funny and moving, and according to Next Best Picture, Ezra approaches autism with heart and authenticity. Only in theaters nationwide May 31st.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Well, Marion says, this is really a question about dealing with trauma as it's happening. I'm 41 and I have twin girls who are 4 and a son who's 3, practically triplets. I just found out in February that my husband has had a girlfriend and I've begun the divorce process. He was my best friend, and even though things were hard sometimes, I was still so in love with him. But cheating was my limit and he knew it. I've been reading the book you so highly recommend, Letting Go, which is one we talk about a lot on the podcast here, and I'm applying the lessons in other areas of my life that I was holding on to too tightly, and I like the lightness that brings to me. But how can I get through a custody battle and still wish him well and send him love? Or must I let this horrible battle go? I understand how to let go of things that are in the rearview mirror, but how do you let go of something when it's something you can't let go of, that you're still in the middle of? Marian.
Well, a bunch of things come up for me. First of all, most people, when they're being lied to, they get some sense that something is not quite right. This person who wrote this, I would ask you, first of all, before you found out about the affair, do you have any sense that maybe things weren't quite right with this guy? Is there some gut feeling that you ignored in yourself? Most of the time I ask that question, I don't know what her answer would be, but most of the time I ask that question, people say, yeah, I had the gut feeling, but I ignored it. So the betrayal wasn't just a partner betraying you, it's also you betraying yourself. Not that you meant to. Again, that had to do with childhood conditioning. And unfortunately, this scenario I've seen too often, that small kids come into the family and then the big kid can't stand it because mommy all of a sudden isn't available. So he goes and has an affair, because men very often relate to women like surrogate mothers as well as partners. So I don't know if that's happened here, but here's the point. You probably didn't pay attention. Not your fault. It's your programming. But now pay attention. So when you say you want to send them love and so on, why the hell do you want to do that? I mean, if love comes up for you, if forgiveness and letting go genuinely come up for you, I'm very happy for you. You'll be a fear for it. But don't force yourself. Don't put a trip on yourself. This guy was dishonest with you. When you had small children to look after, when you most needed support, when you most needed somebody to be there for you, he decided that this is the moment that he's going to go and please his own desires. How do you feel about that? I hope there's anger for you there. That's the healthy response. I'm not saying you should get stuck in the anger, but if it's there, for God's sakes, don't ignore it. And furthermore, it's going to be a custody battle, which is really tough on you. And if it goes to the courts, I tell you what's going to happen in the courts. His lawyer is going to try to make you look like an incompetent mother, because that's what lawyers do. Now, maybe it'll be resolved amicably. Maybe there'll be mediation. I hope so. But insofar as there's a custody battle, you really have to look after your own integrity, your own physical and emotional integrity. Look after your own emotions. Don't make it your job to send him love and all that kind of stuff. If you get to that point, by all means. But right now, put the attention on taking care of yourself and allowing yourself to feel whatever is there.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that that book, Letting Go by David Hawkins, is good for, I mean, it's very hard to apply that book into a situation where you are actively in combat with somebody. I would echo everything that Gabor said, and especially sometimes you have to fight, you know what I mean, to get custody of your children or to do what's right in a situation. And while you're in it, I think the biggest gift you can give yourself is to look at your behavior, you know, from a level of consciousness rather than being mired in your own behavior and your reactivity, and understand when it's necessary for you to react or when it's not. And so just kind of, it's almost like you're watching over yourself, you know, to be very mindful of how you're using that energy and what the best use of your time within this argument and this divorce and this custody battle is. And then once it's over, then you can really work on forgiveness and sending love. And I think that is that's something that you cannot push and like fast forward. You have to really wait until everything is resolved and you're in a position where it's in your past, because it's not yet in your past. And I think that book is really about letting go of your past, not the present necessarily of the past. So while they're great tools, don't pressure yourself into applying them in a situation like this, because you need your wits about you.
And you got to feel your feelings while you're going through those hard things.
Absolutely. You don't want to deny yourself what's happening to you right now or what's happening with you right now. But I wish you well in that. And I'm glad that you put your foot down and kicked him out of the house and are starting divorce proceedings, because you don't deserve that. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our episode today. Yeah. This is serious business with you, Gabor. Thank you for imparting us with your wisdom.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'll see you in Canada.
Okay.
Okay, take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, guys, we have added more shows to my Little Big Bitch tour. I added another second show in Toronto. So I have two shows in Toronto now, December 7th, December 8th, December 9th. I'm in Ottawa, and two new shows at December 15th. On a Friday, we're doing a 7:30 and 10 p.m. show with Kevin Hart and friends. That's in Thackerville, Oklahoma. And all my other shows, you can buy tickets for at chelseahandler.com. I'm starting my tour back up on September 29th in New York City at The Beacon, which is sold out. But the next night, there are tickets available September 30th at The Beacon. So for all fall dates, you can go to chelseahandler.com for tickets and you'll see me.
If you'd like advice from Chelsea, shoot us an email at dearchelseapodcast@gmail.com and be sure to include your phone number. Dear Chelsea is edited and engineered by Brad Dickert, executive producer Catherine Law. And be sure to check out our merch at chelseahandler.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hi, everyone. Chelsea here. We should be talking much more about women's hair loss. There are many reasons that hair loss can happen in women, from a number of medical conditions like anemia all the way to transitions like pregnancy or menopause. And that's where Zion Health comes in. They are hair loss experts who make getting treatment easy and accessible with both medicated and non-medicated options available. Go to xyonhealth.com to get started. Probiotics can be an important part of your daily routine, and they certainly are a part of mine, but sometimes they are a hassle to take. Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are just what they sound like, adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. They're tiny, but still pack a punch, supporting both digestive and vaginal health. To learn more, visit naturesway.com/pearls and use code CHELSEA10 at checkout for 10% off any Pearls probiotics. Terms and conditions apply, valid through July 31st.